Welcome, everybody, to another edition of AETL Alts, coming to you live today with a really, really interesting auto finance software company that we are going to dive deep into auto finance lending and everything in this space. I'm really delighted to welcome two guests to my show. They are the co-founder, CEO, and COO of Karus, which is K-A-R-U-S. So let me start by introducing these two gentlemen. So joining me today is Aaron Travis, co-founder and CEO, and Jamie Harrison, co-founder and COO. Welcome to AETL Alts.
Thanks, Andre. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having us on AETL Alts. We're excited to talk about what's happening in consumer auto finance and how AI is being applied.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for taking time. And I know when you're building a company and as busy as you guys are, as we exchanged, you know, preparation notes the last month or two for this show, I appreciate you guys, you know, taking some time. There's a lot of stuff that we want to talk about, including, you know, the auto finance space, you know, the hot topic of AI and credit underwriting, the credit markets, and, you know, just overall, where you guys are seeing opportunities, and who are, I guess, customers and users of the software, product that you guys are building. And you both have a tremendous amount of experience. So we're going to unpack a lot over the next 45, 50 minutes, but I always like to ask my guests to talk about their inception story or the backstory. The tagline of AETL Alts is the story behind the numbers. So maybe I'll first start with you, Aaron. Maybe tell us a little bit about your background, and then I'll go to Jamie, and then love to come back to you, Aaron, about how you guys met and how you started building Karus.
Sounds great. So just very briefly, first half of my career in New York and San Francisco, traditional investment banking, and second half, series of startups, very early stage, using data to make the markets more efficient, I'll say, with a focus on consumer credit. We had one credit technology company that was focused on unsecured consumer credit. So think of our partners as Upstart, SoFi, Lending Club, Prosper, some of the original unsecured marketplace lenders. Now, that company was acquired by our major mutual fund complex. But towards the end of that being an independent company, we had noticed that a lot of these unsecured consumer loans were taken out for an automobile purchase. And that was fascinating to us. So we looked at a bit of the data and saw some things that said that it performed well. Now, fast forward to really sort of the beginning of the pandemic. And I was thinking about how to apply predictive technologies. So think MLAI and a lot of data, of course, to consumer lending for automobiles. And I looked at unsecured consumer, and it was about the sixth the size of auto, but I could hardly really even rattle off five innovative, disruptive, predictive technology-based auto consumer lenders. So it seemed like a huge opportunity. Now we're going to get into some of the challenges, and there's a reason why there's not as many focused on it. And a lot of that has to do with indirect lending and the dealer network. But that's really the inception story. We got some data. We built some preliminary models a little over 3 years ago. We back-tested those against the incumbents. So think a lot of the auto ABS issuers. And we saw what looked like a lot of inconsistencies and inaccuracy. So we said, there's a problem here that needs to be solved.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, Jamie, let me come to you. And I want to help our listeners understand how the two of you came together, because part of our audience is investing in startups. They're looking for opportunities in private credit. They're looking at opportunities in specialty finance. They're investing in software businesses. And we have a lot of founders. And the team that is assembled here at Karus to build this organization, like any startup, it's critical. It's important. So maybe you could talk a little bit about your background, how you guys came together, and what got you interested in this space.
Yeah, you bet. And before I jump in, Andres, Aaron and I are super excited to be on with you here today. And I will speak really briefly for our third co-founder, Paul Kostoff, who's not on. And Paul is our technical co-founder. And, you know, it actually ties right into how do we all meet. And Paul and Aaron actually got to know each other as they're both graduates of Georgetown and share that common theme within their lives. And
go Hoyas.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So yeah. You grew up a Hoyas fan. That's awesome. Yeah.
But Paul had previously had a AI ML dev shop called Spheric AI out of his hometown of Cincinnati. And Aaron had worked with him on some past projects and was just super impressed with his ability to put you know, scalable AI solutions in place for large financial services companies. After seeing some of the work that Paul had done on some of those projects, it led Aaron to get in touch with him, and that kind of rounded out some of the founding team. But more so for Aaron and myself, you know, Aaron had just talked about his previous company, Random Forest Capital, and kind of what they were doing with respect to personal loans. Funny enough, Andres, I was actually at the mutual fund that bought that strategy. So at the time, that was the fifth largest asset manager in the world, based out here on the West Coast, down on the peninsula. A lot of folks might know which asset manager that is.
Sure.
I was over there helping them build their venture team and their equity group. So we actually took a strategy of writing late stage checks out of the mutual funds into kind of pre-IPO crossover rounds that then morphed into us standing up dedicated funds to move down the spectrum at the time. You know, this was kind of post anything kind of Series B and onwards. Again, you know, the stages and the investment rounds to date have kind of morphed a little bit from a stage perspective. But at the time, you know, that was companies that were doing anything north of $5 million in ARR. But through that, I got to meet, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of different founders out here in the Bay Area. A lot of those focused on really innovative fintech strategies. But most importantly, again, I had a front row seat to the acquisition of Aaron's previous company. And that led me to get in touch with Aaron. And, you know, we really started, even prior to Keras, you know, we built a great rapport. I was friends with his other co-founders at the time. And it led us to kind of start, you know, throwing some ideas back and forth. But most importantly, I think a light bulb moment for me, Andres, was, you know, here I was sitting within the world's fifth largest asset manager. I'm seeing them, you know, adopting and embracing a new strategy that, again, it was in fact powered by machine learning and artificial intelligence. And it gave them the ability to play and buy assets in what was an asset class that otherwise, you know, a mutual fund complex really probably traditionally wouldn't really have some exposure to. And so for them to do that, not only with confidence, but at scale, really gave me kind of a formative moment for me, I'd say, in which I said, okay, wait, these technologies, and if you can go about strategies to pursue assets and price assets in some of these more nuanced asset classes the right way, you can in fact build really large, enduring, and scalable businesses. And that's really kind of a, you know, as Aaron had said, that was part of the inception, along with kind of us taking a deep look under the hood at consumer auto, more specifically, knowing some of the nuances around that asset class compared to personal loans, compared to mortgages, compared to some others. And that was really some of the driving factors there.
That's great. So before we jump into the business and, you know, some of the things that Keras is known for and where you're getting traction, there's two areas that I want to spend a little bit of time on. The first one is just the overall backdrop for fintechs. Okay. And specifically fintech lenders over the last, call it 24 months, we've seen, I don't know if we want to use the term reset, but we've seen a lot of challenges in the fintech lending market as the credit environment, the capital markets for debt in particular, and just the overall funding environment on the equity side has changed for startups. So you all are a startup. You're getting traction. You've got a lot of institutional, call it pedigree, and you just outlined that. Let's just start with a high level 10,000 foot view of the overall environment for fintech lenders, because maybe there's a misunderstanding about the whole, you know, the whole space could get easily painted as not performing, or their models blew up, or they can't effectively operate in this higher rate environment that we're in. So maybe I'll come to you, Aaron, first. That's the first thing I want to tackle before we get into the business.
Yeah, sure. So I'll try and kind of make this concise, because this could be a very long conversation, which we always love to have. I'll start with sort of fintech lenders in general. You're probably going to put them into two buckets. So you're going to have your balance sheet lenders, which are some of the folks like like an Upstart or Upgrade or SoFi that we all know and love. And then you're going to have your enterprise SaaS or technology vendors, which is where Keras sits. And in both of those buckets, they can have some similar narratives and are building similar tools, either for another lender or originator or for their own lending and originating. And then there can be a spectrum as far as whether the technology is partnered with or licensed out. But getting back to sort of the point that you made around the last 24 months, for almost any fintech, it has been very difficult. I know everyone who's listening to this knows that very well. Cost of capital, if you do have a balance sheet, has gone through the roof. Being able to raise equity dollars has become much more difficult. And so efficiency of lending or efficiency of the underlying business has become much more important. Now, in that environment, we went to market, right? In the beginning of 2023, or maybe you could say mid-23. And through our GTM motion, we really didn't have access, or we had to operate as if we didn't have access to unlimited rounds of capital to plug money burning holes, which frankly, for the last 10 years, a lot of folks were in that position. So some really yep. inefficient businesses were built, right? And we're seeing that come to the forefront here with some really sort of shocking wind downs in the last 6 months of fintechs that seemed as if they got to scale. But spending just 1 minute on the predictive technology, ML, AI, in being able to assess credit risk.
Yeah.
And the narrative that you hear over and over, finding good credit where there's bad. Keras, we take very much of a different approach. And 21, 22, maybe even parts of 20 with the government stimulus and everything that happened with the pandemic, you have a lot of models that are trained on data that is just is data that we've never seen before. So the models are not calibrated correctly, and that's coming through in the performance.
Interesting.
So when you have sort of this, when you have this technology that you've built with one simple thing in mind, we can predict defaults and we know how to assess credit because we have all the data and we have these very complex predictive models that we've built. And then the performance is at times even worse than rules-based or manual underwriting or other types of underwriting. That's been something that we've had to work through, all of us, our peers, and of course, Keras. And I'll just say this, we don't take that approach, this kind of feature-rich approach where we say, if this person has this feature, they're gonna have this much propensity less to default. What we are doing is we're using a lot of data, some sophisticated predictive modeling techniques to optimize lending. And we'll get into that a little bit more.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So the second thing I wanted to ask you is the asset-backed market, right? So you talked about mortgages, you talked about consumer lending, you guys are operating in auto finance, right? These are, you know, for the everyday consumer, like if they need a mortgage, if they want to get a loan for a vehicle, if they want to remodel their kitchen and need a loan to do that project or go down to the home improvement store and, you know, buy a bunch of appliances. I mean, this asset-based market, asset-backed finance market is absolutely massive. I've seen reports that it could be upwards of $20 trillion with a T. And so against the backdrop of banks increasing regulation, banks looking to partner with larger asset managers, I feel like banks have largely moved out of the origination business. They've largely moved out of the underwriting business, or it's just morphing. You come along with a technology that allows them to make better decisions, improve, if you will, how they're underwriting. And I'm sure the size of the banks and the underwriters and originators of the auto loan paper vary. But let's just talk about that against the backdrop of just how massive these markets are. It would seem on the surface you're helping them become more efficient and better at making these underwriting decisions using AI ML. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, Andres, it is. But let me flip the script on that a little bit
here. Yeah.
And so you've had the bank. You're right that they have been pulling back. And part of that's sort of the end of this massive credit cycle. And
yeah.
It ended in a pretty jarring fashion.
And a lot of regulation and, you know, just a lot of variables, right? A lot of factors.
Correct. But when you think about Karis's customers or some of these innovative technologies, let me give you a great real world example. And mm-hmm. this was publicly released. One of our customers is an auto dealer group that had never lent anything to anybody. They've been around for a couple of generations. They're called H. Greg. Like I said, it's publicly released. They used our software and our platform to launch auto consumer lending. So they're lending to the customers that come into their dealer. Those are customers that would have, I'm simplifying this a little bit, yeah. but those are customers that would have gotten those loans from banks. So now something that would have been very difficult for H. Greg to do, they were actually they would have had to do something similar to what AutoNation did in buying CIG, which sounds simple enough, buy an existing finance company and use that to lend to your customers.
Right. It's actually, embed it. Yeah.
It's not that easy. Yeah.
No, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's not that easy. So, you know, I think that to your point, yes, these markets are massive. The amount of money flowing into asset-based lending and private credit, we see the headlines still every day. There's going to be a ton of funds launching new products for asset-based lending, some household name logos, even this summer and at the end of 24. So that's only going to be get bigger. I'm not sure if banks ever are going to be able to sort of flow back into this the way that they normally had with pulling back during a credit cycle ending and then going out and being more aggressive. They certainly will have that tact, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. So the narrative around AI in particular is, I you know, you hear people ask if it's really AI driving a lot of the underwriting, or is it really AI being applied, or are they just, you know, they being, you know, whether it's the tech company or the underwriter, are they using AI as a catch-all? Like, it's the buzzy word that you have to use. Can you talk about, you know, this notion of finding good credit amongst the sea of credit and how your tools and your technology are, in fact, different? How, in fact, if I'm listening to the show, I can gain, you know, a level of understanding when somebody says AI and underwriting about an auto loan, like, what are the things I need to be paying attention to?
Sure. So let me start with Karis's own point of view, and what we've built is not, we're saying that we're going to detect a great credit risk where everyone else thinks that it's bad. Is that going to happen time to time from what the modeling work we do with our customers? Sure. But that's not really how we're approaching it, Andres. It is more around optimizing what they're already doing. So when our potential customers, the conversation starts not with talking about tens of millions of data points and all these ML AI algorithms that we're using and how many PhDs are on the team. It starts with, how's your lending performing now? What are some of your pain points? There's a lot of metrics around lending outside of just the headline delinquencies and charge-offs. And then how can we use Karis's massive data set, your own data, the models we've already built in our modeling capabilities to help you optimize around what's already working in your lending and what you have pain points? How do we increase efficiencies around it?
Okay. So Jamie, I want to ask, go ahead. No, I just want to ask Jamie, in talking with customers, what is some of the pushback? Because it would seem that if I'm originating and I'm trying to optimize lending and I want to, you know, I want to bring somebody in like you guys to help me, because you've got more sophisticated technology models, data, way to synthesize the data that I have, integrate what you guys see. I don't want to oversimplify, but what has been the reaction from the marketplace?
I mean, the reaction has been great to date. I mean, Andres, you know, we've got now, as of next month, we'll have a dozen different customers signed up and working with us here at Karis, and that's a number that is growing in real time. But I mean, the reaction's been terrific. when you think about some of the pushback that we've gotten, again, I don't want to make, you know, entire environment sound like it's roses by any means, but I mean, look, let's start with one. I mean, you nailed it on the head at the top of this conversation. There are, in fact, folks that have been pulling out of consumer lending, you know, after, you know, the SVB debacle that happened in recent past. You know, there were folks that are saying, hey, let's focus on deposits and let's move out of kind of non-core business lines for some of these financial institutions that was, in fact, consumer lending. You know, when it is a little bit of a, you know, there's a game that, not a game that we have to play here at Caris, but ultimately, when you start talking about credit risk with, you know, prospective or potential partners, there, you know, that's something that is that should not be taken lightly, and it's not taken lightly. And mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the work that we're doing with our prospective partners is a lot of hand-to-hand combat, but it is, you know, very deep in the weeds. It is, you know, getting them to, you know, take a look at their own data in partnership and in parallel with us. And really inspiring them with the work that we can do ahead of a potential launch. And, you know, kudos to our data science team. None of them are on this call right now, but our CTO, Paul, who I mentioned on the top of the call, and the folks that are working with him on that side of the house over here, just do an absolutely, you know, stellar job at showing folks really kind of under the hood insights that they can take away from their own lending efforts to put them in a place that can right side the ship, or again, as Aaron had talked about earlier, you know, double down on their existing expertise and strengths through their own data and through their own expertise. So from a pushback perspective, it's, we touched on the macro environment. I'm sure we'll continue talking about that throughout the duration of this call. But, you know, the reality is there are folks that have been pulling out. So it's okay. Look, auto loan originations are in fact still growing. I mean, so it's not like, you know, people still need cars. People still need to finance cars. You know, that's never going to go away, and that's not just going to stop. So even if, you know, if you think about the market perspective, if there are less participants, you know, someone is picking up the steam in some capacity, and so it's finding those folks. But I think there are also folks, even if they did pull back for a short time period, and some will stop forever. That is reality, and that's something that we're not scared to say. But you know, it's finding those folks who still have a balance sheet. I mean, a great example for you, Andres, would be we've actually had a few customers through instituting Caris's technology. These are folks that were struggling to get back in the game, per se. Mm-hmm. So, you know, say
they took a pause and
that's right. And yeah, they had a warehouse facility, they had a credit line, you know, 2 years ago. You know, covenants got super strict on those. You know, maybe they were floating rates, they weren't fixed. And so they were really trying to rethink and for the most part, recapitalize their own businesses and take a step back and say, hey, how do we move forward from here and kind of what this new environment is now going to look like? And through actually instituting some of Caris's technology prior to them even getting back into the origination game, we were able to help some of those partners through doing analysis work and through doing data work and in partnership with them, approach the capital markets with a better narrative, with more technology, with more expertise around their own internal technology and sitting side by side with ours. And it actually afforded some of those partners the ability to go out and secure financing. So the pushback of folks, you know, not being able to play in the game because of this new environment we're in, while that is reality, we're actually helping folks re-enter
the market. With
a different narrative.
That's interesting. I'd love to I mean, the auto finance market, as we know, consumers come with all different profiles from a credit, let's just say credit score perspective, right? You've got the prime, near prime, subprime, everything in between. You sound like you can offer multiple solutions to different types of, let's call it auto finance participants, banks, credit unions, and other types of, let's say lenders. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I would think a gigantic company, you know, a big money center bank has a different set of needs and is serving a different type of, let's say dealership with its floor plan financing strategies than, you know, say the specialty auto finance company that's doing more subprime lending or near prime lending. Can you talk about how you guys tailor solutions or products to, you know, service different parts of the market? And maybe Aaron, I'll let you start.
Okay, great. So yeah, this kind of ties back to what I had mentioned earlier in that we're optimizing a lender or originator's strengths as they exist right now. So this usually starts with a deep analysis on their lending and where are the pain points. And you'd be surprised at what comes to the surface. Yeah. So our conversion rates or our look to book, our win rates in these states aren't great, or these types of dealers aren't great, or our performance, delinquencies and charge-offs aren't great for large loan amounts, things of that nature. And so we start there and we start thinking about how do we build on top of the data and models, like I mentioned earlier, to course correct around what's working. And if and most people's goals are to grow, right? That's why we're all in business. And so if you want to grow, and this is one thing that I think you know about consumer credit across the border, credit across the board, as you try and expand scale and increase your volume, a lot of times that can affect performance in and of itself because you're having to do a bit of a loosening of the credit box in a general sense. And so how do we increase volume? Like one of our very first customers that when you said, how is it selling AI? One of our very first customers, we really had to inspire them about the data and the approach that we took and a lot of back testing and analysis. And now that's starting to flip a bit because now we have 8 to 10 months of performance data for this customer where their conversion rate has gone up 150% and the projected program yield on the notes that they're originating has doubled. So that's super exciting. At some point, I don't think we're quite there yet, Andres, but at some point we'll just be able to show results and then dig in rather than right now. We do have to dig in and inspire them and that we're good at what we do and we can correct for some of the things that are happening. And so it's going to be different for every customer and where it is on the credit spectrum, it of course matters in a general sense, but our solutions can solve problems throughout the credit spectrum. And as you get up towards prime, where predicting defaults is a little or maybe a lot less important, it becomes around automation and speed and pricing. And if there's one thing, whether it's a portfolio or a brand new origination, that a mantra that we have that we get from the capital markets, because as you mentioned earlier, we have a lot of connectivity to them. There's no such thing as bad credit, just a bad price. And consumer auto is interesting in the indirect channel. You're pricing this to the dealer. So it's a different construct.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people who think about auto finance because of their personal experience might think a lot of cars are sold new on lots and you're getting financing offers from the sales professional. Let me walk you over here to our finance department. I mean, I haven't bought a car in a couple of years, but it was painful. I mean, it took so long. Now I feel like a lot more consumers are going to the dealerships armed with information. They've done research. They know some of them have financing, but that all depends, right? And this is a gigantic market. So here's what I want to ask you. If you look at the auto finance supply chain or value chain, you have credit unions, you have dealers, you have your lenders, you have specialty finance companies. We've talked about asset managers, you know, the Wall Street asset managers, private credit funds, and on and on and on. Okay. So you have all these different participants in this massive market. So maybe I'll start with you on this one, Jamie. How do, like when you think about where your all's tools and capabilities really can plug in with that gigantic market as a startup, I'm curious, like, where do you start? Like, you sound like you have a lot of relationships. You guys come from having done this before, but I'm just curious for my startup listeners, investors, like, that's a big chain of potential customers, I would think, or maybe partners. You've used that term. How do you think about beginning to, you know, to I don't want to say verticalize, but penetrate into some of these markets?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Andres. And so, you know, just taking a step back, you know, you did just rattle off a bunch of names for, you know, what I'll call industry participants, and it is a large list. And, you know, you could be thinking, man, how do you bite on this entire apple? This is a pretty big apple to chew on. So with that said, I mean, when you think about who's CARE has partnered with to date and how are they going about selling the technology in its current form? And for those folks that we're signed up with and we're working with currently, you know, those are institutions, I should say, that are extending credit in real time in either a direct or an indirect capacity. Through that, though, and those would be, again, the credit unions that you mentioned, the banks, the specialty finance companies, and the traditional indirect and indirect lenders. When you think through the process of selling to those institutions, though, you really do have to have a pulse on what is going on within the broader environment. So, for example, you know, for specialty finance companies and many indirect lenders to be in the origination game currently, you know, there are implications that have to be met on kind of the flip side of the coin. You know, many of them have a credit line, they have a warehouse facility, they're operating and they're extending credit and, you know, a forward flow capacity using funds and investor dollars that come from elsewhere. And many of those fund dollars come from Wall Street, or they come from, you know, an institutional lender. So this trickle down effect of knowing who to sell to and how to sell to them, there are nuances and understandings of the broader ecosystem that you do have to be aware of. So knowing that, you know, it kind of has, I don't want to say has morphed the product set that we're offering, because again, you know, think about where we are today. We're clearly focused on optimizing and enhancing current lending initiatives, and our customers speak to that with the list that we've built to date and the traction that we've got. Through that, though, it actually has opened up many, many more opportunities for us. And one thing I'll touch on, you know, really briefly is, if you think outside of just truly optimizing and enhancing lending efforts at point of sale and an indirect capacity, Karis also has a capital markets business. So earlier this year in January, we launched as the exclusive forecasting partner on Intex Solutions. Intex is the premier fixed income structuring platform used by Wall Street and the capital markets for fixed income securities. You know, they've got a lot of different what are called add-in forecasting partners that they offer for other asset classes. So, you know, they've got CoStar for CMBS and sure. Morningstar for RMBS, so on and so forth. And through a lot of the work that we've done over the past couple of years from a data aggregation perspective, from a forecasting perspective, we've been building a rapport with them and went through about a year and a half long process of onboarding them, vetting the models and things that we built over here. I mean, keep in mind, you know, if you're going to be an add-in forecasting partner on Intex, you're going to be offered to, you know, the largest money managers in the world alongside right. rating agencies, the actual issuers of that debt, and the underwriters in the forms of the bank who are taking these deals to the public markets. And so when you think about, again, rolling this back in to make sure that I'm hitting on your question, how are we working with all these different players in the value chain? You know, what started as Karis really working with indirect lenders has now morphed into us having a capital markets business where we're focused on you know, helping the capital markets and the buy side, you know, buy bonds in a smarter and a more efficient manner through the forecasting and the pricing tools that we've built. We've got credit funds that, you know, layering back to kind of the regional bank pullback we touched on at the top of the call. We've got credit funds that are now using Karis's front end portal to evaluate and monitor and price portfolios that they're seeing that are up for bid in the private markets. So a pricing tool on that side. And so when you think about it, we're not deviating from the core offering that we've built. It's just, hey, how do you want to, in fact, use the technology that Karis is offering? And while it lends itself, no pun intended, incredibly well to indirect and direct lenders, a lot of those same tools that those counterparties can use for their own efforts can, in fact, be applied to a whole range of solutions and problems. And so focusing in and narrowing in on how this can be applicable and how we can sell them in a way that's not, you know, putting a constraint on the business from a being spread too thin perspective is important. And it's growing quite nicely.
Yeah. The, you know, as you are discussing the optimization and enhancement, I'm thinking, Aaron, I have a listener also who is looking at where to put capital to work, right? And how to deploy capital. And there's been such a proliferation over the last 10 years, really. And I think it's only gaining steam given the macro environment, the rate environment, and just the Wall Street engine of creating product and building solutions and competing and growing. It really is about being able to, I don't want to call manufacture yield, but deliver yield to a retiree, right? Who is got a pension fund or has a 401k account. And if they're invested in an asset manager and that asset manager is creating private ABS, public ABS, or participating in those markets. What I think Jamie just described is how you guys enhance and optimize back in the value chain, but also somewhat towards the front. Can you talk about the, I guess the question comes back to just data at the end of the day. It's like data has become such a huge and big part of making informed credit decisions. What were we doing, or what did this space look like 24, 36 months ago? Is this something that, when you say enhance, that we've gotten dramatically better because of data scientists, because of guys like you guys, at taking the data that was always there and reinterpreting it? I'm just really curious, because that, it, to me, it really gets to the edge. You know, we saw quant take over Wall Street, right? We saw algorithmic trading decimate, you know, just the good old fashioned stock picker. There's still opportunities, but they're harder. So I'm just curious, are we seeing the advent of this happening on the credit markets and the underwriting?
So great question, and sends me down a couple of different paths, but let me stay focused on the heart of that question, Andres.
Yeah.
So coming off of the topic we were talking about earlier, where some of these models, a lot of these models have simply broken down.
Yeah.
They had data that was skewed. So when we think about our peers, what we think we're seeing is a lot of, how do I take out the skewed data that has my models off and course correct to make them correct again? And I don't know how it remains to be seen how successful those efforts will be.
Yeah.
Going back to sort of that optimization type mentality.
Yep.
Now you have a huge influx of yield buyers, which you're referring to.
Yeah.
So it might be really helpful to talk about what's not a yield type of buyer. So our dealer customers, they would like to move more metal. They make money on service, and they make money on each car sold. Mm-hmm. So unique approvals and bookings are very important to them that wouldn't be important to a yield buyer. Credit unions, it's very important for them to increase their membership and deposit base, which gets you away from sort of a yield type buyer. Some of the specialty finance companies have pretty big credit lines, so getting the cost of those credit lines is down. So how do they work with Karis on those? Now, going to answer your question more directly, going to those yield type buyers, which as I had said, is becoming a bigger and bigger part of the market. Sort of, how do I buy notes? How do I get a 12% return on an asset-backed loan or portfolio? So that gets a little bit more complex. I will say this, we've built something called the Karis Portals front end, where you get a ton of real-time data. And this goes to your question about what has changed. In our mind, what we think has changed is that the days are far from gone. Not that many folks are doing this yet, but it's a real-time data and dashboards, almost looker-like dashboards, so that you're running your lending program in real time, Andres. Rather, you're pretty sophisticated, right? I'm very sophisticated, and I use a ton of data, and I have a ton of my own data. So every quarter, I have our analysts pull down spreadsheets. They're still doing spreadsheets and putting it into Tableau, and it takes us 2 or 3 weeks to do the analysis. And then we implement changes on the analysis 2 or 3 weeks later. So by the time we make our changing to our lending program, we're doing it off of data and lending that we had done 6 months ago rather than yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're compressing and that's the enhancement, the optimization. That has to be extremely powerful. Let's talk a little bit about differentiation, because the other thing that I believe to be true is, you know, there are clearly a lot of folks going after this market, right? There are a lot of, they're not just one credit union. There's not just one bank. We have 6,000 banks in this country, right? You know, you look at Europe, you look at Japan, that's not the case. So we have this massive, you know, appetite for debt in this country. We're not talking about politics, but there just seems to be such a unique set up in an environment with all these participants? And I'll let either of you answer this, but I'm curious, when you look in the marketplace and you think about peers and competition and what are other folks offering, you don't have to talk about specific names, of course, but I'm curious, what are you seeing out there that is not quite real or not quite optimizing or not quite enhancing, but is being packaged as such? Either one of you, feel free to jump
Aaron,
in
I'll,
on
I'll
that.
Start and you know, obviously feel free to layer in, but I'll steer away from, you know, specific names, Andres. Want to be respectful of everyone
sure.
out there. I'll say for one to start, you know, one thing that we actually take a lot of pride in is the fact that we are focused exclusively on one consumer asset class, and that's being auto. The reason that's important is, you know, there are peers out there of ours that, you know, are focused on multiple asset classes and are actually offering AI solutions and, you know, decisioning solutions, you know, approval, you know, mechanisms that are pulling on data that again is not uniquely pertinent to just auto. And, you know, going back to the top of the call, you know, Aaron had mentioned that auto is such a very unique asset class with respect to the others. You know, you've got a dealer present, you've got a piece of collateral, and the incentives through that financing chain are they operate very, very differently than these other asset classes. And so it is in fact important. So for example, if you're going and taking a decisioning model or an underwriting model or a loan structuring model that, you know, was built and, you know, many of the data tied to it, or much of the data, I should say, tied to it, you know, it spawns and stems from, you know, a mortgage originations or, you know, personal loan originations, you know, you're kind of setting yourself up to fail. And so while we do think there's a huge apple to bite on and there's an opportunity with respect to broader consumer lending in general and these other different asset classes, you know, focusing in and honing in on one is important to us because, again, we think it gives us the best potential upside for our partners and their potential upside to succeed in a very specific way that can be calculated and can be, you can put your finger on it. You know, we talked about, you know, finding good credit amongst the bad. You know, Aaron kind of dismissed our view on that narrative and how we're going about things here at Caris. But, you know, other high level kind of ancillary points that could be valuable for you and the listeners here would be, you know, not trying to be, you know, a replacement to FICO scores. Do we think that FICO scores are all that valuable in today's current day and age? And, you know, the answer is in fact no. But, you know, what we're doing here, what we're offering partners is not a, you know, a better way to come up with a FICO score or a risk grade per se. Again, it is, you know, analyzing every individual borrower, that piece of collateral, and coming up with a forecasted cash flow from that potential note and that origination, and rolling that up from bottoms up into a price that can be derived from that. You know, I think there's some other folks out there within the industry, I should say within consumer auto, that do in fact limit themselves from working with only one type of potential partner. You know, we talked about here on the top of the call, some of the folks that we're working with and you rattled off, you know, credit unions, you know, traditional indirect lenders, specialty finance companies, banks, asset managers. You know, while that list is in fact large, the tech that we built here does not limit ourselves to only being able to work with one of those different types, one of those specific types of institutions. It can in fact be applied to all of them. And then lastly too, I mean, and I think it's so important to hone in on, Andres, and it's, you know, we're not here at Caris, we're not offering, you know, pre-made off the shelf fixed underwriting solutions on partners. Again, everything in today's day and age, people are leery of these black box.
It's dynamic, I would imagine. It has to be. Yeah. That kind of leads me to my next question, which is we live in clearly highly uncertain times. You can pick what aspect of uncertainty you want to hone in on. I mean, macro, geopolitical, rates, car values, technology, the environment. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And when you're a lender or you are in charge of ensuring that your models are enhanced and optimized and keeping up with, you know, your competitors, so you can make a smarter loan decision to the customer that walks through the door to buy a car with your partner, you know, that's a lot of stuff to a lot of variables, a lot of factors to be weighing in. And Aaron, I want to come back to you because you talked about this time dynamic. With all those things to weigh in, how is Kerecis, set of solutions and products, how is it accounting for all of that and helping your partners to, if they're an indirect lender, right? So they're providing financing to a dealership group, for example, just to pick one example. How is it accounting for all of that in real time? So you can sort of help them, you know, sleep at night, but also grow and not miss out on loan opportunities that are good ones.
Yeah, great question. So first off, I do want to mention that we do have what we call a decision waterfall, a visualization on the Kerecis portal. So we try as best we can not to look like a black box. So you can see how and why some of the Kerecis models are making decisions. But a more direct answer to your question looks something like this, Andres. Not, okay, we think that we're really smart. We're going to tell you who to lend to and how to lend to them. And then we're going to circle back in 12 to 18 months and see how the performance was. Yeah. Oh, gosh, those 22 vintages, which have been awful. I think we all know that. Those 22 vintages were horrible. So what's the problem? How are you course correcting the models? Instead, that speed of iteration and forecasting the bookings as they're coming in is very important to tweak things like LTV. I need to be higher on my LTV to compete, but I don't want to, of course, risk performance. So we're tweaking that in real time. And as our customer or our partner is booking loans, we're forecasting what the cash flows are going to be off those loans. And so we're not waiting till for all.
So it's like interactive, you know, back and forth. Okay.
Correct.
Got it. So, and talk a little bit, if you could, like the service model, like when you have a partner, the data is coming back and forth, your data science team, somebody showing up and sitting at a desk, if you will, and like reviewing a relationship and saying, hey, we need to book a call and get on the phone and do a Zoom with these guys and talk. I mean, what does that kind of look like?
I mean, the most simple way to describe that is, those iterations that I referred to are fast and furious in the beginning. And so, yes, it's emails, getting on the phone. Our data scientists almost look more like a chief lending officer for you.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean,
So they're really, our team has been great and they're battle hardened through the last 24 months, which is amazing. So it's some pretty deep domain expertise. But yes, the first month, it might be constant app reviews. I mean, to get real specific here, it's sort of, you're going through app by app by app and you're tweaking. And so, or iterating, I should say. And over time, as the performance starts to come in, like the one that I had mentioned earlier in the call, I don't think that we've had one of those deep dives in a month, going from almost daily in month one. And so we'll see. I think, you know, rates, as we all know, the Fed funds rate got put up to where it is at 5 and change now pretty quickly, caused a lot of disruption, but now it's kind of plateaued there. So there hasn't been any huge market changes. And even though everyone's watching used car values and saying, oh my gosh, are they going to come back in more or what's happening? If you kind of look at the Manheim, it shot up, came in. So it has been very volatile, but now it's kind of staying elevated, anyway, I think those iterations will happen again. The good news is we have lots of data. We have lots of real-time data, and we'll be able to jump on those iterations if and when needed quickly.
And you'll be able to, I would imagine just thinking if I'm looking at Kerecis, the more data you're ingesting, the more valuable this moat, this business is becoming. I mean, it's just kind of seems like that way on the surface if I'm looking at your organization. Let's conclude and talk outlook and kind of the roadmap, I guess, if you will, for the future. You did make the point earlier that you don't want to be all things to all lenders. You want to be very focused in consumer auto finance, huge market. I'd love to ask you just about, like, from the founder perspective, about milestones and what have been you know, to you all and your team, like in on this journey, what have been some of your big milestones that you would point to in the first, you know, couple of years? And Jamie, maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure thing, Andres. I mean, to start off the bat, I mean, getting upwards of a dozen customers currently has been a huge milestone for us. I mean, I think most people are aware that, you know, the startup environment over these past 2 years and change has not been something that has been easy for a lot of folks out there. I mean, getting your business to a really efficient place, which is something that we've done here at Caris, was top of mind. And we think we've been much better off for it compared to some others out there. You know, so the customer traction that we've gotten today has been terrific, and I would consider a huge milestone. I think some of the partnerships that we've nailed down that set up the roadmap ahead for us, you know, I talked about the partnership with Intech Solutions and the capital markets opportunity on the top of the call here. That's something that we're really looking forward to. And while that's still kind of a process and a sales motion that is in process, getting that nailed down and creating that avenue for potential revenue is another milestone. I think, you know, we just hired a new VP of sales, which I consider a big milestone here internally. Yeah. You know, we know that that's a hire that shouldn't be taken lightly. And, you know, we've got a great Brian Niebauer is on here with us with the team now and comes from another a company that we've gotten to know quite well and think incredibly highly of him. So looking to really supercharge some of our sales efforts here after everything to date has in fact been founder led. And continue to grow the team on that side.
That's exciting. Yeah. Aaron, I'm going to let you have the final word. You know, when you build a company, I don't know how the teams decide you're going to be a co-founder and CEO, you're going to be co-founder and COO. I would imagine if you're in this together, like it sounds like the two of you are and your third co-founder, I mean, everybody sort of throws the title out the window and you just get shit done, as I like to say. And, you know, you live to fight another day. But I'd love to give you the last word and ask you kind of high level, you know, one, kind of what's next, and two, you know, we've talked a lot about licensing the software and selling the software to lenders, you know, portfolio buyers. What are some other applications? You know, those are kind of my two final questions. You know, what's next and what are some of the applications where you see this potentially being very applicable?
Sure. So I'd say as far as what's next, we want to continue down the path of having what looks like a sandbox where you're building on top of your own underwriting, building on top of your own expertise, your point of view on credit, what types of dealers you're working with or what types of borrowers. I mean, we're not only indirect, so although that it dominates auto finance. So I want us to look like this flexible tool that instead of hiring your own data science team, instead of buying and having your own data strategy, it becomes a very much easier build versus buy type decision. So am I gonna build my own CRM or pay $25 a month to Salesforce? I want them to say, I'm gonna pay $25 a month to Caris, and this is going to be the output will, and the data will be mine. So that's one thing. And I'll mention one other is efficiency, which is something that technology companies, startups, certainly fintech hasn't had to think about for a long time. And Jamie mentioned it, efficiency. So how many dollars in capital are we spending to get this many dollars of ARR? And then how much are we spending operationally on a monthly basis to maintain this much monthly recurring revenue, MRR? We've been forced to be focused on that. So that's kind of the good news. Can't say it's the most fun, but now we come out of it as a very efficient business and we have to stay hyper-focused on that. As far as moving forward where this can be applied, now you think about how we have that hyper-focus on cash flow forecasting, whether loan level or portfolio. The ABS markets, ratings agencies, pricing products for bonds, all these in the auto lending, or in consumer auto credit, there's been very little innovation around what your cumulative net loss is from S&P or Morningstar or KBRA. There's been very little innovation or automation around if you're a mutual fund complex and you have 1,000 auto ABS bonds in your portfolios, what is your nightly pricing, third-party nightly pricing look like, and how is that done? So I'm getting a little bit in the data weeds here, and we also think that there's some great things around valuations and historical valuations and how those can be used at the collateral level. But we do want to stay focused on auto. We don't think that the broad kind of alternative to FICO works well across different transactions in a different consumer auto classes. So that's how I see the future of Karis.
Well, no question, no question. The innovation, the AI, the ML, you sort of put two words that I'll wrap us up with: the enhancement and the optimization. You know, that's like, I'm going to call it the, not AI, it's EO, right? You're talking language that I think a variety of participants listening to this show today could really get their arms around. You know, if I'm a lender, if I'm indirect, looking to participate or grow in the auto consumer credit auto space, if I'm a potential partner. So I just want to tell you guys, thanks. It's really going to be fun to see, you know, where Karis goes. You've already signed a dozen customers. I can only imagine, you know, what the pipeline looks like with bringing on a VP of sales. So that's exciting. Congrats on that milestone. And this was a real goal of mine, is to bring an organization on the show at ATL Alts that could talk about what is actually involved in not just the manufacturing or the creating of the yield, but what goes into the underwriting decisions that are, you know, whether it's bonds or it's loans, they're packaged that ultimately are going out to consumers. And here's one other thing I'll tease out. I have a brand new podcast that's launching, and this show is going to be on it. It's called Asset Backed. And it is a very focused show for participants, folks like yourself, builders, credit providers, capital markets participants who are in the asset-backed, asset-based finance space. So I intend to put our conversation there this week, because I think there's going to be a lot of people interested in this conversation. With that, Aaron Travis, the co-founder and CEO of Karis, and Jamie Harrison, the co-founder and chief operating officer, I want to thank you for taking an hour today and joining me on ATL Alts.
Thanks for having us, Andres.
Thanks, Andres. Appreciate it.
Look forward to getting an update and talking to you guys soon. Wishing you the best.
Same to you. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.